We are, in fact, capitalists, right? I mean, I get it. But it is possible to have profit and still do the right thing. The single biggest learning is this, is like a great track record is essential when looking at the team. It matters how you achieve those returns that are on that beautiful looking investment summary. And part of that means providing a great living experience to folks along the way.
You're listening to the Real Estate Runway podcast, powered by Quattro Capital, where we are all about alternative business and investment strategies to help you amplify life and maximize wealth. Here's your host, the recovering engineer turned multifamily investor, Chad Sutton.
All right. Real Estate Runway family, welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Runway podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sutton. We're joined today with Spencer Hillegas. We're going to get into some really cool passive investing things today. But first, before we do, folks, if you get any value out of this show or anything else we put out there, wherever you're watching this, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, whatever, just interact with the show, like it, share it, subscribe, pay it forward. More people just like you need to hear what we're talking about today. So think about three or four people, share it with them. Spencer, welcome to the show, brother. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Chad. Really honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for going through those tech difficulties with me as we got this new shiny camera working. So hopefully I look beautiful to all of you watching today. But Spencer, man, before we get going, help us understand who you are, what you're into, and why you're talking to us today. And then we'll get into the meat of the show.
Yeah, again, thank you for having me, Chad. I know we're recording on Halloween today, so it's a dynamic day for both you and I. We both have two kids each and a lot of events. So we're fitting in the education for the betterment of all. I sit here as a full-time passive investor. I'm based now in the Bay Area, California, cool little island community right next to Oakland, across from San Francisco in California. I have two kids, my co-founder of our investing club, is also my wife. Her name is Jennifer Morimoto. So that's a whole separate podcast if people want to understand how to build a business with your partner. I think it's the best thing ever, but it's not for everybody. I just want to start with a quick kind of anecdote, Chad, because it's a huge milestone for us. We've worked years for this. We took our whole family, including the boys, to live in another country this past summer.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a first, you know, and we lived in Portugal. It was like a 2-month experience. It wasn't a vacation. It means like living, you know, like we're working there remote. Digital nomad is the cool way. People talk about that these days, I think, for brandable terms, you know. But we worked 13-year careers. It's like I was up until 2019, 5 months before COVID, I was building operations groups and sales and CX groups for tech companies for 13 years. And never in my life did I think I'd be able to go and live in another country and take my kids to go and do that, leaving the house behind and, you know, trying to decouple from a geography, you know. So this whole passive investing thing, this lifestyle has been enabled by this investing stuff, you know, so I'm just deeply grateful to be where we're at now, but it's been a heck of a journey.
Well, man, that really enables you to talk about what we're going to talk about today, because man, you've walked the walk, you've put in the hours, you've put in the diligence, and clearly you've had some passive investments make out. I mean, they've been some good outcomes to where you got to go and enjoy life, you know, with the proceeds of those investments. That's what it's all about. It's not about making money. You know, it's about being able to achieve your level of freedom that you're looking for, whether it's, you know, simple lifestyle in your backyard in another country, whatever it is you're doing, that's all you're looking to do. So I'm so excited to hear more about that. And I got to know, what was your favorite part about living in Portugal?
Oh, how much time do we have? You know, not to get too heady, too philosophical, too fast, Chad. The biggest, most amazing aspect of it is the expanded worldview, right? And it's easy to say that and kind of throw it out there and say, what the heck does that mean? Coming back and reflecting on, wow, we were in this other place. We didn't have all of our stuff, the toys that come along with life, right? And also for our boys, our kids right now are 9 and 6, pretty young dudes. And they brought back much bigger perspective. They had made some friends abroad. You know, our ability to come back and say, we were really happy and working and doing that without all this stuff. So you better believe expanded worldview also comes with this really deep appreciation for stuff that's a bit more, you know, ethereal. It's the stuff, it's the people around you, it's the relationships you build, connecting with other people who see the world differently and hearing their perspective. So yeah, I won't diatribe it longer than that, but that was by far the most enriching part.
Oh man, I love that. That's both personally and with your children. I mean, imagine their expanded worldview. The world just got a lot smaller to them, you know, at a very young age. So that's so cool, man. Let's transition into, you know, how you got to do this. I mean, you're a self-proclaimed professional passive investor, right? I know you have, you know, a passive investing club of sorts that your wife and you, you know, run together, and then you really help other passive investors reach the same level of achievement that you have, which is why I'm so glad you're on the show today, because we have a good chunk of our audience who is in that boat, you know, investing passively, trying to pick the right operator, trying to mitigate risk, make sure your money comes back and with friends, right? So yes, let's start it there. I mean, you know, what does that look like to you today? You know, we're in a time where, dude, we're in a 50-year, we'll just say event, where things that have not happened in 50 years have happened, you know? And so if, you know, what does the investor need to be looking for today? Let's just throw it up and start there.
Yeah, absolutely. And man, couldn't have said it better. Whole new landscape than we were looking at, certainly before even COVID hit us back in 2020, right? I feel the 2023 landscape is throwing everyone for a loop to the point where we forget, 2020 also happened too. And that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, we've had about 4 years of 50-year events. So
yeah, I think we're good for now, right? I don't think we need any more on the pile. So I'll start with some quick background. You know, everyone goes through their own journey and how they get into this world of passive investing. I didn't wake up one day working 80 hours a week in a tech company and, you know, grinding it out, making great W-2 income. My co-founder and wife, Jennifer, making her own career, like great stable careers in two different paths. But we didn't wake up one day and say like, oh, let's go drop 25K, 50K, 100K into a passive investment in a syndication or like a self-storage deal, right? A multifamily deal. It started with the same way in three phases. I mean, I say this cleanly now, like, oh, here are our three-phase journey, Chad, but it's not what it felt like. I mean, it was like a confusing, it was disorienting. It was like hacking through with a figurative machete through all these decisions and, you know, skinning our knees. So we bought a rental. I was working full-time, spent $430,000 on a rental in Vallejo, California. You know, it cash flows $250 a month now. You don't call that a cash flow win. You call that a learning lesson. And yeah. I mean, it's appreciated since then a lot, but we didn't really know what it meant to invest for cash flow. But before that, we set a goal. We said, we want to change our lives in 15 years. We set a long horizon. Thought that was too long. We chopped that goal in half. And that's when we started saying, let's go hit our monthly income target and figure out how to actually do this right. We can't keep dropping 100K into $430,000 duplexes. It's just not going to get us to where we got to be. Phase two, we got comfortable buying sight unseen. We went and bought up to 5 turnkey single family rentals in the Midwest. They cash flowed $250 a month per property for about a 60K purchase price each on average, which is killer, right? I mean, for Bay Area standards, for West Coast, you know, just coastal pricing, that's confusingly cheap. And then we learned what it meant to have like C- D+ neighborhood properties. We learned what it means to have your tenants turn on you every single year, squash your economics. We learned what it means to get letters from the county saying, oh, there's a couch sitting in this other state in front of one of your properties, Spencer. You got to deal with that. And we're sitting there going, I don't really know if we have the time and overhead and appetite to go and field the management of rentals at this point, because rentals are not passive.
Anything but.
I mean, like, but we didn't really get that, you know. There's always a place for rentals, but we stumbled through all those phases. That took us a couple of years. We eventually got to the point of like, we're not going to devote any more overhead time. Like, I was still working full-time. Jennifer was working full-time, raising two kids, trying to do what's right, you know, dumping money in 401ks. And then we eventually said, oh, look at these bigger deals, like these weird looking multifamily, self-storage, other, you know, big commercial deals where we can buy a piece of something. And we wired our funds into our first multifamily deal. And that was in Alabama. And you know, that was so hands-off once we got into it, we just kept on going and going. And eventually a business came out of that somehow where we now also help people get into deals and we de-risk them to the best of our ability with all of our learnings and our vetting frameworks. You know, it's been a pretty wild ride and we're just grateful to be here on the other side of it. So, and helping others get to the same spot.
You know, I love some of the things you said there, Spencer. I mean, to a point, you don't know what you don't know, right? In any venture you're going into, you have three things that are guaranteed to be there. You're going to have known knowns, the things you know about the thing you're going into. You're going to have your known unknowns, things you know you don't know. Then you're going to have your unknown unknowns, like, for example, the C-class tenant behavior that you experienced over the first couple of years. And you're going to learn these lessons one way or the other, folks. You know, whether it's School of Hard Knocks, you know, Scars and Stripes, where you have the scars to prove it, you're going to benefit from somebody else's learnings. Either way, you're going to learn them. So whether that's paying for education, investing with a group like Spencer, who's done it before, or doing it yourself. So maybe walk through that a little bit. You know, so you've been through kind of the I'm doing it myself mentality, you know, and that that thing doesn't work. People do a lot of good things in that world, but there's a lot more to it, a lot more unknown unknowns than I think we realize. So let's talk about maybe some of the benefits of the group investments that you got yourself into. So you came in as a part of an apartment community or some other commercial asset. Let's maybe talk about some of the known knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns that you found when you got into that thing and maybe where that
totally went. Yeah. And gosh, I love the framing you just give on that, Chad. The unknown unknowns. Oh my goodness. We could write a book just on, or do a whole podcast just on that topic, I think.
I wish I could take credit for that. There has been a book written by Chris.
Is Balls. There one?
Great
okay.
book.
Okay.
Negotiating. Oh, I gotta check it out. On it. So anyway.
You know, so my lens on it, getting into real estate in this way through commercial was interesting, right? Because I mean, technically I grew up in a real estate family. Even my dad was a broker residential. So I thought I understood. Talk about unknown unknowns. I thought I understood what real estate meant, but that was the lens, a very narrow lens, residential brokerage of a vast world that is this industry that is real estate. I mean, we're talking like you got land, you know, you got all types of commercial properties across the board, residential properties, et cetera. So once we got into the first deal, we realized we needed a more structured vetting framework personally, even for just our own investments. I love frameworks. I learned a lot about them from people way smarter than myself in the tech world. I mean, these tech founders who they would have to make 1,000 decisions a day, small ones, medium ones, big ones, high stakes decisions for rocket ship growth companies. And I'm sitting there going, how the heck do they keep all this in their head? Like, how do they make quantitative, qualitative, blended decisions at velocity and still and not lose their minds and have a good outcome most of the time? And it's frameworks. Right. And ultimately I built and Jennifer and I built like a 5-part framework just to vet the who on the deals that we were going into to invest in a multifamily deal, invest in a storage deal. And this is not even getting into the who versus the where versus the business plan, like those three pillars that I can't take credit for. Someone out there way smarter than myself came up with that stuff before, you know, in real estate. But just on the who, it's, you know, the team, got to look at the team, got to look at their approach, and got to look at the comms, how do they communicate? There's a lot under that bucket. And also looking at the values and also looking at like the legal side, right? And like, so we look at those five kind of pillars within, we're about to go invest in this deal. Who's the team that's going to be on the boots on the ground, managing this thing, managing the asset, making offers on the property to buy it, making sure they're buying right, all these things. And ultimately there's 70 nerdy bullets beneath like all these different five pillars I just outlined. But in the end, I think the biggest learning in 2023, to come back to your question as to what changed pre-COVID, through COVID, many deals. We've now partnered on, you know, either passive or active or both. We've now partnered on over 50 deals. And I think that throughout that time in 2023, the single biggest learning is this, is like a great track record is essential when looking at the team. Like, yeah, you want the exits. You want a team that's gone full cycle. But with been a hell of a couple good years, right? I mean, 2021 was a landmark year. So you've got some teams that have these incredible exits, like these amazing outcomes. But to couple with that now, you better believe I want to see a repeatable approach, like a repeatable process. Like whether it's me learning a song on guitar or, you know, I saw the violin on the wall behind you, Chad, but like if someone's learning an instrument, they're learning a sport, they're learning a discipline in business, they're building a company, they're buying an acquisition and going to improve the building. If they've done something before, it's not just looking at, did they win the first time? Because that could have been a fluke. We need to understand what is the business plan and repeatable process that generates that same result again. And that's ultimately, if I had to say, like, what's the biggest change to our framework and vetting process? Like when I look at a deal, it would be that. Show me the secret sauce and the recipe behind that, you know, that helps them get to that outcome. Because, you know, of course, the sub bullet to that would be, triple check to make sure the debt structure assumes black swan scenarios beyond all underwriting assumptions, you know, because interest rates have changed a little bit in the past, you know, 2 years.
A little bit. Yeah. Like 200% or more. So it's pretty right. Wild. I love the way you said that. You know, said another way, I've heard people say, look, you got to look at the team, right? Or the jockey riding the horse before you look at the horse. And I would even venture to say, okay, you need to look at the jockey and the track before you pick the horse to bet on, right? Because I mean, you could I love analogies. You're going to find this about me, Spencer. My audience knows this. They're rolling their eyes right now, but we're going to try a new one here today. All right. So if you go to the horse track, let's say we're at Keeneland or the Kentucky Derby, right? You're betting on the right horse. It's going to make you a good return on that little bet. Maybe let's just say, because we're responsible bettors, we're betting $1.50, right?
Right.
And we see some that have 10X returns. We have some that have 1,000X returns, some that have 2X. And it's all dependent on risk adjustment, right? Like how likely is it to happen, right?
Right.
And when you think about it, I mean, gee, I can pick the horse. I can pick the prettiest horse and say, gee, that's probably going to be my winner. But what I need to be thinking about is, okay, what are the conditions that that horse has to run in? What's the track look like? What's the environment? That's your market. Okay. I can have the fastest, most amazing thoroughbred in the world. But if, let's say, the track's a little muddy that day, well, a slower horse with stronger legs is probably going to do better, you know? So it's very interesting when you think about, you got to think about the market environment it's in, but even more so, you can pick the horse last. You think about where they're racing second, but first you think about who's riding the damn horse. You know, I can take a world-class thoroughbred, and if you put me on it, who has no idea how to ride it at the Kentucky Derby, I'm probably not going to win the race, you know, or even finish the race. I might get hurt really bad, you know? So you got to think about it that way. And the way you said it is it's about the people, you know? We at Quattro really believe in this because, you know, we believe that, at least in our company, we are for everyone, but not for everyone. Does that make sense? We will always be there for whoever wants to work with us. But, you know, we sometimes find ourselves turning people away who maybe don't have the right mindset because we know they're not going to be happy when we start making decisions. You want to make sure those people who are riding that horse, you want to make sure they have the same level of morality that you have. You know, like when a decision comes up relating to the well-being of a resident, how do you react? Is it, you know, their problem, I got to get the money? Or is it, well, gee, we should be a good human? That matters. It's not right or wrong. I mean, we can argue that all day long. You have to be able to, you know, empathize with how your sponsor is going to run that deal because it's not just a black box that spits off cash. There are people living there every single day. The sooner y'all remember that, you know, it's super important. So I love where you went there, and I've said a lot, so I'm going to let you hop in there as well. But
well, I didn't know you were going to go there, but I really appreciate the comment you made there, which is a values comment as an operator, because that's literally one of our five pillars, you know? And when I've brought that up to folks, I would say the majority of the time talking to active folks, other passive investors, you know, they kind of just look at that like, okay, cool. It's squishy, you know, and I get it. Like we're all here because, you know, we are in fact capitalists, right? I mean, I get it. But it is possible to have profit and still do the right thing when managing an asset that is also playing as the place where families live. And, you know, a little different if we're looking at something like a self-storage asset. I mean, I used to play in a bunch of bands and we used to use those things and, you know, occasionally maybe even crash in them in my early 20s, you know. So the different era, different use case, but I'm making light of it. In a multifamily property that houses 200, 400 people, it matters to us. And I think it's an appropriate thing to say that where you park your capital as a passive investor and who you park it with, that's a consideration. Because some folks out there, you know, you can already read stories about it over the past, you know, 12 months in particular. Take out all the debt related, interest rate related volatility that's out there across the multifamily landscape. There's properties that are struggling because of debt. There's also properties that are struggling because they haven't been managed well. And they haven't been managed well, and they're not taking care of their residents, and they've made front page news. We even included that in like a Q2 quarterly newsletter that I sent out snail mail wise to our investor club, where we were highlighting this one operator made Wall Street Journal. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. And the residents in this community had been completely neglected, you know? And so I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but just to kind of make it more tangible for folks too, that like when we talk about betting on the jockey, and you can ride analogies all day with me, Chad. I love a good analogy. I think that's just part of good education and storytelling and helping folks understand the learnings, but it matters how you achieve those returns that are on that beautiful looking investment summary. And part of that means providing a great living experience to folks along the way.
Nectar understands that raising capital is labor and time intensive, and we exist to solve that problem for you. Nectar provides fast, flexible, cash flow based financing for experienced rental owners and operators. Whether you need cash, For acquiring properties, portfolios, or you simply need it for ROI-generating renovations or expansion of staff, Nectar has your back. Grab your 12-month P&L with debt service and click the link in the show notes below to apply today.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I couldn't have said it better myself. And so now that we've truly driven that nail in that, you know, the people you're investing with are super important, right? Let's start moving down that analogy a little bit. So, you know, let's get into the track next, the market, right? So when you guys are looking, I guess first question is, are you even deploying capital today? Or are you sitting holding? That's an important distinction. But when you're looking at where you're investing right now, how are you looking at the market differently? I mean, the cycle has changed. You know, we're in a phase of winter, I would venture to say. How are you evaluating where the money might go? Like, forget what type of asset or what asset.
Sure.
Well, how has that changed?
You know, we all in the business enough, like, talk about the fundamentals all the time. The fundamentals. And most of your listeners probably already know this because you've educated them and they're sophisticated. But, you know, fundamentals can just simply just mean, is there demand for these products? Is there demand for multifamily? Is housing needed, not just nationally, because that's a major headline. Real estate's local. It's always been hyper-local. And so what we look at is still the fundamentals. Now, where those fundamentals are true, I would say has been absolutely clarified over the past 12 months and is increasingly so. The primary market that we focused on with our money and in active partnerships we've done to date across 45 was in and is still in Dallas. And so we've done a lot in Dallas over the years. And I'm grateful for that now because I think we're seeing places like, just using that as an example purely. I'm not saying everyone go out and laser focus only on Dallas. That is not ever going to be my message. Yeah. I try to be asset class agnostic and look at the data when it comes to markets. So using that as an example, they've got landlord friendly, owner friendly laws. They're business friendly. They're encouraging growth. They're bringing employers, large stable employers to that area. Generally, it's a massive footprint. So I'm speaking in broad strokes here as a guy sitting in California. I know I'm treading lightly here because I'm not living in Texas or a Texan. I have lived outside California, to be clear, in Colorado for 10 years, but hey. Also looking at markets that are still, you know, secondary, strong secondary markets, but they're maybe having like a short, you know, they're taking a breath on some of their rent growth because rent growth has gotten flat, if not negative, in a lot of secondary markets. But love the Sun Belt at large, love some of the Rockies markets, you know, but I would say right now, as long as they are still holding on those fundamentals, Chad, of business friendly, regulation friendly, owner friendly, and they're still attracting enough of the employer base that is going to continue providing jobs and compelling wage healthy jobs to the people who are going to live in these communities. Because they need to get paid a salary to then go pay the rent to live in this facility. You know, it sounds so basic at that level, but I do think those are still the things we look at now. Same things we looked at, you know, before the interest rate, the historic 40-year, fastest in 40 years interest rate hikes, and the same things we looked at before COVID. Just some of the numbers change, the expectations and thresholds change, but the fundamentals and kind of the types of fundamentals, they do not.
Yeah. And that's really the thing that's, it's difficult to focus on because there's a lot of headlines out there talking about commercial real estate in general. Real estate in general is going to crash. It's a bubble, all this stuff. The rates are going to kill us. In some isolated cases, that's going to be true, folks, but we're talking in brushstroke averages here. But what Spencer is mentioning is as long as you're focusing on blocking and tackling the basic moves it takes to win a football game, for example, right? You're looking at the long-term viability of the market. I don't usually get behind CEOs of brokerages, but I love watching the CEO of Marcus & Millichap and his videos he puts out. He always ends it saying, keep your eyes to the horizon. He doesn't do this corny thing I just did with my hand, but he always says, keep your eyes to the horizon. Real estate is a long game. And he's right. Wherever you're making an investment, if you're able to convince yourself, gee, 5 to 10 years out, it's hard to see 10 years. Let's just say 5 years out, right? I think those fundamentals are still going to be trending in the right direction. You're probably going to do okay because I'm here to tell you, your underwriting, it might be as close to true as it's going to be in the first year and it's going to get progressively different. You know, it's just a model, right? Your likelihood to experience headwinds, that's what fundamentals give you. If you're buying a boat on rough seas, your likelihood of experiencing a negative outcome is, you know, pretty high. But if you're buying a boat in an area where the seas are generally calm, your likelihood of a safe passage or safe trip or safe outcome and probably getting, you know, having better results than you thought, maybe some sunny days, you know, probably pretty good. So I love the way you're positioning that with the market fundamentals there. You know, before we end the episode, let's take it over to the horse part of it, right? The actual asset. So we've talked about the jockey, we've talked about the market or the track, and now let's talk about the horse itself, right? You know, how are you and your group looking at the physical asset differently, right? Mm-hmm. Are you avoiding certain asset types or asset classes? Are you avoiding certain ages of assets? I'm just curious to hear what your perspective is on that.
Yeah. You know, we all are keen on certain asset classes, right? And as much as I try to look purely agnostic, I can't. I'm too enamored in some ways with a few of them. Multifamily is the target, like the target percentage in our own personal portfolio is at least half. We want that to be multifamily. And maybe about 30% self-storage, also kind of a nice sister asset class that we got into a few years ago. So I like those asset classes a lot. And then there's a handful of others we've done as well, like mobile home park, medical office, you know, a few others. But multifamily, you know, I think it's not only going to have its days, I think sooner than people realize, but some of that data that's coming out in the past, even like 3 to 4 weeks, very interesting. And it's the double-edged sword here, not to get 0 to 60 too fast. So you can rein me in, Chad, if I get too nerdy here too fast for the listeners, but I'll just say this. High interest rates have like frozen, for all intents and purposes, have frozen capital markets, right? So you've got banks lending less.
Which was the intent, by the way.
Exactly right, yeah. Jerome Powell and the Fed goes out and raises at the fastest speed and most severity in the past 40 years. So capital markets freeze. People are able to borrow, but way little and at higher rate. The other side of that is that you've also got construction financing slowing down to a crawl. So what does that mean? Well, we're seeing a little bit of some softening demand for multifamily because so many new buildings have come out and gone live in all these amazing Sunbelt and Rockies markets over the past 6 to 12 months. Tons of new hip place to live for all these folks in these metros. And now, oh my God, like just literally this morning, I was reading the freshest data on this and it showed, look at the number of starts for new construction. And it's like the lowest level in a decade. I didn't make that up. I think RealPage gets credit for that one. So what does that mean? That means the midterm forecast for multifamily is great because as long as, I mean, again, assuming big disclaimer, put my air asterisks on here, assuming you're in the market with the right fundamentals, that's a good looking piece of data. If you're buying value add and you're going into the markets that you already believe in with teams you can believe in, I'll stop my diatribe there.
I love what you just said there, man. You saw me cheering you on if you're on the video. I was just like, yes, keep preaching here. And the reason I'm saying that, folks, is, I mean, let's add a little more detail to that. And we're talking specifically about apartments here, but on a typical, I mean, apartments are typically built as 200 plus communities today. Rarely do you see them smaller than that. This is economics. It's fine, right? Typically, when you talk about acquisition of raw land, entitlement, zoning and approvals, architecture, and then go vertical and build, it's typically about a 3-year play to get that done and then leased up, okay? Because you take about a year of lease up, 2 years of entitlement and construction, okay? So think about that. Yes, it is true that we had a lot of deliveries hit this year. Well, let's think. It's 2023. 3 years ago, what happened? 2020. COVID, okay? What happened during COVID? I watched this and I was baffled by it at first. I was like, wait a minute. Everyone freaked out and stopped buying apartments. A lot did. A lot of big money did. Let me rephrase that. Big institutional money backed up and said, oh, we don't know how operations is going to look. We don't know what legislation is going to do regarding people paying rent. Let's go develop, right? Let's go to these Sunbelt markets or whatever. Let's develop. And so a lot of development happened. And guess what? It's 3 years later, ding, ding, ding. All of those deliveries started showing up today. Even some of our best markets, you saw a few points, you know, drop in occupancy because a lot of new stuff was hitting the market. Yep. You know, that's okay. That's healthy. That demand actually pulls our rental rates up a little bit because those guys are asking top dollar just to be able to try to get their NOIs where they need to be today, right? So right. You have that. That's happening now. We're now hitting a point where there's not, the money isn't there to build. I mean, most construction debt is floating rate debt, folks. Most of it, unless you get a HUD 224D or whatever that is. Most of it is floating rate debt. Most of it's bank debt. It ain't there. Right? The banks don't want that right now. So we're at the lowest starts that we've had in at least 10 years since probably coming out of 2008. So yeah, fast forward 3 years, what he's saying is there's going to be a huge lull in deliveries, especially in some of our core markets that need them. So if you're positioning yourself, you know, where the fundamentals are favorable, right? It's highly likely that 3 years from now, you have some, some tailwinds, to be generous, right?
Yes, very helpful tailwinds. And thank you for just rounding that out in a more articulate way for me, Chad. It's a beautiful thing, but it's hard for all of us to zoom out and look at the thing and look at this picture on that time scale of years, as you articulated it, right? I mean, 2020, looking back at that, tale of 2 years, man, in one. First half of the year versus second half of the year, as soon as COVID hit, the money got cheap to borrow and build those buildings. That was great financing, but also rental rate assumptions went down to like zero for value add projects in the first, you know, couple of years. And suddenly we're back to a place where we're looking at pro formas. We want to see those truly conservative assumptions on the front end, but I don't want to get more nerdy about underwriting. I think you hit it really, really well as to where the demand is going for this wonderful asset class that we love.
Yeah, I think the key, and you kind of poked on it there, the key right now, folks, is going to be everything is about basis right now, right? How are you buying it versus what you're able to finance it at? And as long as you can get into a deal where it's going to be able to cash flow and be okay for the next couple of years, I think very sunny skies are coming. Do not get into a deal right now where cash flow is negative, things are spiraling. You can't really count on the capital markets to bail you out on that for the next couple of years, I think. But last question, Spencer, are you still investing right now? Are you on hold or are you actively deploying capital and why?
Yeah, I am. And we are. So in a couple of ways, I would say that have looked a bit beyond just into other asset classes as well, you know, operating businesses that, you know, if I'm looking for really two questions that help guide me as an LP, it sounds really basic and silly, maybe for some folks that are more sophisticated. I'm a simple guy. So I like simple guiding questions. Like, what's the goal for the money? Right? That's a question that is in my own LP playbook. And before I go through my much nerdier, longer list. And then the other one will be, is the goal cash flow or equity specific, like growth specific focused? And on cash flowing deals, yeah, we're actually exiting an LP investment I made a few years ago. I think it might've started in 2020. That was like a mobile home park, you know? So getting capital back from that, I think it's the only one so far this year. It's a capital return event. So it's a slower year in that way on the return exits, but redeploying that immediately into a new deal, into a new fund. And so really excited for that. And I think that we're actively deploying. If it's multifamily deals that we're investing in this year and we're partnering on, those are exclusively deals that are being bought from a distressed situation. So the price point is right. You know, there's no such thing as bad assets, just bad prices. I did not make up that phrase.
That's right.
Someone way smarter than me did, and I can't give him credit. But on the other hand, looking at other models of just like operating businesses, you know, to be able to generate cash flow, if it's a cash flow investment, then we're looking at some of those as well.
I love that. Well, Spencer, let's transition to a couple of the Quattro questions. Are you ready?
Ready.
First one, what is your superpower? Could be life or business, and how does it serve you well?
Again, I'm a simple guy, and I think from what our investors have shared with me, it's about active listening and long view combined with some patience. It's just equal doses of those three. What we have aimed to do since inception, you know, not just as LPs, but when we decided to turn this into a club because folks were asking for their help, for our help, right? It was about building authentic relationships with our investors and the members of our club. You know, we haven't gone big with, you know, big presence. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, we don't go big on social media. We don't go big and do conference stuff, but we've built hundreds of active investor relationships and we've done that the old school way just by getting to know them. And it's come from those three components.
I love that. We're going to mic drop on that right there. So pick that thing up and drop it. And number two, what is your biggest failure? Again, life or business, and you know, what'd you learn from it?
Biggest failure I would have to give to, you know, call this a, I don't know if this is a personal or professional. I'll call it a personal. There was a time when I was working 80 hours a week in probably the grindiest of grindy startups. And this is before we embarked on this journey of passive investing, right before I kind of got the spark, like something's broken here in this life equation. I didn't see my infant, or I think it was a toddler, like at this point, our firstborn son, I didn't see him for like 2 weeks or so. And that sounds small. Maybe it sounds delusional, lofty, but like that was a period of time where I was going in, sun was not up, you know, in the morning, coming home, it was late, sun was down, And I never wanted to recreate that moment again. That was like a truly broken life equation. And I was like, well, we're making great money, maxing out those 401ks. Our W-2 income is strong. Don't feel happy. Certainly not feeling like I'm showing up as a father. And I think that it's that era where I look back and I'm like, yeah, that's about as big a failure. I can come up with other stuff in business, sure. And I managed people when I was too young, you know, 200 people I was managing when I was like 26 or 27. I'm 40 now. Like at that point, it's a whole other podcast, but you know, it's really the family learning during that era. And right before I got the spark to be like, something's got to change.
Wow. That one feels like it's speaking to me, man. I have a very similar, you know, background with, or to say, the work-life balance in a prior life. So yeah, glad you recognized it early. And it sounds like you have a much better, I don't know if it's balance or if it's harmonization these days. I don't really believe in balance. It's more of how do they play together? So
yeah. How do we integrate, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, last question, how do people get in touch with you? You know, I know you've got a pretty cool passive investors club and things of that sort. And what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, please do come to our website. You know, check us out, madisoninvesting.com. We've got educational blogs on there. Folks can, you know, book a time with me, join our investor club if they'd like. It's a no pressure thing. I'm also on LinkedIn. I took a pretty healthy long break, but back on and regularly talking to folks and posting some educational stuff.
Awesome. I love that. Well, folks, all of this will be for your clicking pleasure and whatever you're watching this on. So just scroll down, click into the notes and check out Spencer and his team. Fantastic people. Spencer, thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate you just sharing your knowledge today and your heart a little bit, your willingness to help others navigate the world that is wealth creation.
Yeah. Well, the feelings are very mutual. Honored to be here, Chad. Thank you so much. And, you know, Godspeed to both of us navigating Halloween.
Yeah. Amen to that. I think it's going to be 31 degrees here tonight in Nashville. So I just noticed if you're on YouTube, you get to see me in orange and black. I'm festive and didn't even know it. It's just in my whole thing.
Crushing it.
All right, everyone. This has been another episode of the Real Estate Runway Podcast. Again, if you got any value out of this show, hit that review button, share it, like, subscribe, wherever you are, just interact with it. Share it with somebody else. Pay it forward so they can hear the knowledge that you heard today just the way you did. With that being said, this is the Real Estate Runway Podcast signing off. Over and out.
Do you manage multiple legal entities? Is your data scattered across various unsecure systems? Is your team spending too much time on manual processes? Do you struggle to meet reporting deadlines? Simplify entity management and compliance with Entity Keeper. Entity Keeper helps easily manage entities, build and maintain complex organizational charts, and track filing deadlines, all in one secure, cloud-based platform. And with automated alerts and centralized document storage, you'll stay two steps ahead of compliance deadlines. Click the link in the show notes to learn more and book a demo.
We hope this episode was insightful and brought value to your day. If so, please be awesome and leave us a 5-star review. Find out how Team Quattro can help you at thequattroway.com. Until next time, this is the Real Estate Runway Podcast.